It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. Cleary Walters served 5 years in prison for drug trafficking. Since her release in 2008, Walters has attempted to put her life together and put her prison experience behind her. That last part was complicated when her former girlfriend and conspirator on drug charges published a memoir that turned into one of the hottest television shows of the last few years. Walters was the woman whom Piper Kerman renamed Nora Jansen in her memoir, Orange is the New Black, My Year in a Women's Prison. And, as such, she is the inspiration for the character of Alex Voss on the Netflix TV series of the same name. So how do you get on with your life when a fictional version of your past is everywhere? Cleary Walters has written her side of the story in her own memoir. It's called Out of Orange. And we welcome Cleary Walters to the show. Cleary, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So how did you first learn that your life was going to be quasi-fictionalized?
On the television commercial that I saw in the middle of the night.
And did you figure it out right away? Was it something that you thought, well, that's similar to me? How did that process for you?
Well, kind of strangely, I was watching the TV, a TV show, and a commercial came on, and it was, I thought it was like an ad for, I don't know, shampoo or something. And then this buzzer sound goes off and the door slams, and it like made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. It reminded me of prison instantly. And then the narrator was like, I'm Piper, blah, blah, blah. And I knew exactly what was going on. It was an advertisement for the series, the Netflix adaptation of my ex-lover's memoir. And I'd heard that was coming, but certainly not television. It was coming to Netflix. But something about it being in a TV commercial really kind of got my attention. Oh, then I saw Laura Prepon wearing my dark-rimmed glasses and totally freaked out.
So at that time, Piper Kerman, your ex-lover, had already written her book titled Orange is the New Black, and you knew about that. You didn't really expect it to go any further than that, and you didn't see it as the same kind of, I guess, encroachment on your life.
Right, right. No, I barely graced the pages of Piper's memoir, and that's just, you know, that's sort of a literary thing. It didn't exactly as you said, it did not feel like an encroachment on my privacy or my life or anything. But when it came to Netflix, it certainly was a game changer.
So going back, how did you get involved in all this? How did you begin the life that ended up with you going to prison?
Well, my sister was in a romantic relationship with a very wealthy exporter from Nigeria. And I knew that she was smuggling diamonds for him, or at least I thought she was smuggling diamonds for him. And when I got to a particularly screwed up point in my life and went to live with my sister, when I got there, she wasn't there. She was off gallivanting around the globe with her husband to be and two of her roommates who were also involved in the diamond smuggling. Asked me if I wanted to work, and of course I said yes, because I thought diamond smuggling was actually kind of, I don't know, cool. It didn't seem dark and seedy. It seemed more James Bondy or something like that to me. So I went to work as a diamond smuggler and discovered by the time I got too far away from home to get back easily that it was not diamonds that were being smuggled at all.
So when you became involved in smuggling drugs, what was that life like? Was it glamorous, exciting, enticing?
The first trip was awful. I could not wait to get home and never do it again. The money aspect of it for a very brief period of time was delightful. I'd never had more than, you know, $1,000 in my hand at one time. So for just a minute, that was fun, and then the fun went away. When I discovered that I could not just close that door behind me quietly and exit.
So were you in the fun stage or the trying to figure out how to exit something that it looked like you couldn't exit stage when you met Piper Kerman?
I was in the you can't exit easily stage when I met Piper Kerman. By then, a friend of mine who was also in the same predicament we had thought we came up with a brilliant idea to relieve ourselves of the burden of having to break the law and smuggle drugs. We were both convinced that if we ever did it again, we were going to get caught, hands down. We just knew it. So we let our friends carry our goodies for us. That way we were meeting the incessant demands of the drug lord and not going to get caught doing it ourselves at the same time. Little did we know anything about conspiracy laws, but we thought we had made our quiet exit when Piper and I got involved. Piper was my cat sitter at the time. Not being involved didn't mean that I didn't have to travel with these people that were, in fact, carrying the drugs. So I needed a cat sitter, and my cat liked Piper. And eventually, I liked Piper, too. At one point, I asked her to go on a trip with me to Indonesia, just as an, you know, somebody to go hang out with, because I didn't like to travel alone. And she went. We got stuck in Indonesia for a while. I developed a big old crush on her, and that friendship turned into a relationship when we got back to Europe at some point. And Piper was never really a mule. She carried money back from Chicago to Brussels at one point, but I don't think we even considered that a crime. Basically, we didn't do our homework on drug smuggling and international crime before we got involved in all of this nonsense.
We're talking with Cleary Walters. Her new memoir, Out of Orange, tells her story. She is the real-life ex-girlfriend, ex-lover of Piper Kerman, who wrote Orange is the New Black, which was turned into the Netflix TV series, which is now in its third season. So, Cleary, at the time of your arrest, were you still heavily involved in the smuggling ring? Had you managed to create some distance? What was the situation when you were finally arrested?
Well, I had gotten out, and not by any of my own doing. I guess two different occasions, people got busted, one coming into the airport in San Francisco and one coming into an airport in Chicago. And I had been trying to get out for quite some time and not having any success. But what happened after these guys got busted, and it was like 6 months apart that they were arrested in these two different cities, is the drug lord backed off of us. I guess at that point we were no longer a good risk. So I had been out of it for maybe close to 2 years, a year and a half, and broke, working on building my own company. I was a fledgling web designer in 1995, which that was the very beginning of, you know, the web, and positioned pretty well after a long struggle with learning the technology required to do it. I was pretty well positioned to launch my new career in the World Wide Web when I took my first check from the Department of Education to the bank to cash it, and I was arrested at the bank at the drive-thru.
Why at the bank? Why did they track you down there?
I haven't a clue. They had apparently been staking out my house and followed me from my little house out in Newfane, Vermont, into Brattleboro, Vermont, where I was, you know, going to my drive-thru. And I pulled into the drive-thru window and was fiddling with my check, signing it and whatnot. And I saw this car pull. It was like SUV pulling in front of me and kind of park in a funny way that I wouldn't be able to, like, get out. And I thought, that's rude, but went on about my business. And I saw, like, out of the corner of my eye, the U.S. Marshals logo on the guy's sleeve, and I looked up, and then I looked in my rear view, and it was like, oh, the whole string of police cars behind me. And I thought the bank was being robbed, and that wasn't what was going on. They opened my car door, and I knew exactly what was going on there. They were there for me. I don't know why they picked the bank, but they arrested me, handcuffed me, and took me to the post office.
To the post office.
Exactly.
What happened at the post office?
Well, there was apparently in the U.S. post office in Brattleboro, Vermont, holding a cell. So they took me across the street to the post office, and I thought they were going to mail me somewhere.
So after your arrest and your plea, it took a long time before you went to prison. In fact, it was just a tremendous gap between that and your sentencing.
Yeah, I was arrested in 96 and started serving my time in 2003. I was extradited to California, and I think the intention was to put me right in jail and to go get this Nigerian drug lord right away, but that's just not the way things turned out. The Nigerian drug lord was caught in London, and he was held there, and the U.S. tried to extradite him, and that attempt to extradite him took 5 years. It ultimately failed, and when it did fail, then they sentenced us, and we all went to do our time.
So during all this time of waiting, and then even before the sentencing, did you know what was going on with the other people that were involved in this drug ring? With your sister, I'm sure you knew what was happening with her, but what about the other people, like your friends and Piper?
No, I knew about my sister, and I would get, like, little windows into what was happening by virtue of superseding indictments. When I was arrested, I was taken to California for one indictment, and then while there, the fact that the two people that were busted became part of the same conspiracy. And so they dropped the indictment in California, and it was superseded by a new indictment in Chicago. And so when I got these indictments, I would see the list of people that were my co-defendants, and the list of people kept growing.
So it was in the Chicago detention facility that you actually crossed paths with Piper Kerman again, right?
Right. Actually, it was in the Federal Transfer Center in Oklahoma on our way to Chicago.
So what was that like?
Well, it was a very cold reunion. Understandably, she blamed me entirely for her predicament. And so she was not up to a warm, cheerful, "How are you, honey?"
It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. If you're just tuning in, this hour we're talking with Cleary Walters. While serving probation after a prison term, she discovered that her former girlfriend, Piper Kerman, had written a memoir about her arrest for drug conspiracy and her time in a women's prison. That memoir was called Orange is the New Black. The book was the basis for the hit Netflix TV series, and Cleary Walters was the basis for the character that would be named Alex Voss on the TV show. Cleary Walters has written her own memoir. It's called Out of Orange, and she's been talking to us about her life and the differences between the TV depiction of herself and Piper and her own story. So, Cleary, thanks for sticking around with us this hour. So, a lot on the show is made of the relationship between Piper and the spectacled character Alex Voss, who is based on you increasingly more loosely as the show goes on. I think if the show didn't have any basis in a real story, a lot of viewers would think that the type of situation of having people charged in the same case who may have been involved in testimony against one another, that just wouldn't happen. They wouldn't put them in the same facility. And in real life, you and Piper were never in a prison together, but explain how you did spend some time together. Was it just during that process of transportation and awaiting testimony?
Yeah, Piper did her time in Danbury. I did my time in Dublin on opposite coasts. We had one co-defendant who for some reason went to trial, and I think it was because he was so afraid of the drug lord. And so one of the stipulations of our plea agreements, and everyone in my conspiracy ring, all of my co-defendants, pled guilty to their charges, and we all agreed to testify where necessary. So the assumption was that we would be testifying against the drug lord, and I don't think any of us had any problem with that. But then one of our co-defendants was a holdout, and we were both already serving our time and were plucked by the marshals and brought to Chicago to testify against our co-defendant. So we were housed together at the MCC, the Metropolitan Correction Center in Chicago, while this trial was going on, and it was a 5 or 6 week process from the time we arrived until the time I was sent back to my happy little home in Dublin and she was released from there.
So was that the end of her sentence then?
Yeah, it was. I'm not sure how that worked out. I guess I didn't realize it, but she was already at the end of her sentence when we were in Chicago together. And the trial ended up, having delays, which is really, really common in federal trials. There's continuances after continuances. And so what would have been like a week-long stop in Chicago for both of us turned out to be a very long, protracted engagement, to the point where when done, she was actually released.
So you ended up serving several more years after that trial and after you were transported back to California.
Yes. I did it almost 6 years.
So when Piper's memoir, Orange is the New Black, came out, you weren't in prison anymore, but you were on probation.
Right. I had 5 years of supervised release when I got out. I had pretty much just gotten back to Cincinnati. I came back to Cincinnati to take care of my mom because while I was incarcerated, my father passed away and mom started to get a little bit of senility going on, so I needed to come home and take care of her, so I couldn't go back to California, which is where I had reestablished my roots and reestablished my career in software, too. So I was in the backyard gardening, and I heard NPR. Actually, my sister called me, told me to listen to the radio, and Piper was on the radio. And that was the first time I'd heard of her or from her or anything since Chicago.
So at that point, when her book came out, if you would have liked it or not liked it or anything, as a condition of your probation, with anybody who was involved with a co-conspirator, you weren't allowed to have any contact with Piper during that time, right?
No contact, indirect or direct or via aliens, no contact.
You mentioned the book didn't make much of an impression on you as far as thinking it would change your life or affect your life in any way. You felt that you weren't a major part of the book. But the TV show was a different story, and after seeing that the show was coming on and you saw that there was a character that was pretty obviously based upon you, did you have an intense curiosity to watch the show? Were you afraid to watch the show? I know that you've watched it. How did you approach watching it?
Sitting at my computer desk, I came home from work, actually, and I was supposed to be waiting to watch it with some friends of mine who knew my whole story. They were like best friends, and I was 2 feet tall. And I came home from work, and I decided I was going to go ahead and watch the first episode of it, and then I would rewatch it with my friends. But I sat down, played the first episode, had a mild nervous breakdown, and then you know how that's how Netflix like just prompts you through the episodes one after the other? That was my first Netflix binge. I was watching Orange is the New Black.
So what was going through your mind when you saw this played out? I know that eventually you felt that somehow it would expose you to the world as an ex-con. Did you think that there were certain things that people would immediately connect if they knew a little bit about your story?
I had no concerns about anyone knowing a little bit about my story that I cared about knowing that. And the only people I cared about knowing that were my employer. And it had taken me 2 years when I got back to Cincinnati to actually get a software company willing to hire an ex-felon. And, you know, I had told them about my criminal record, but I hadn't gone into, like, any kind of salacious detail about it. So my concern was that, you know how if you watch a show that is, I don't know if you do this, but if I ever watch a movie or a show that purported to be based on truth, then I always look for more details than the show's offering and Google everything. So my fear is that my coworkers would start Googling the show and get the connections made for them. And by the time I finished watching the show, I realized it was going to be a hit and that this was no longer like a small concern, that this was probably going to end up pushing me out onto Front Street. And I didn't quite know what to do about it. I mean, watching the show was in and of itself a very bizarre experience. You know, it's loosely based on reality. It's the story that Alex Voss's plot is so far from reality that I didn't have any, like, oh, I don't know. I guess the thing that they got right is what bothered me, is just looking at the jail and the relationships between prisoners and the relationships between guards and prisoners was like watching your own nightmare on Elm Street unfold in front of you.
Were you worried then at any point, especially now that you have this memoir, that people will take the fictionalized version of you and just assume it's you, to assume that there are so many things that don't have to do with your life and your personality and what you didn't do, that they will think it is you, since there is, you know, even more of a connection between you and the show.
Yeah, there is that risk, but having written the memoir with the actual facts makes it a little less likely to happen. And I guess the thing that the show did for me is ripped away the notion that I needed to keep half of my life, like, buried under a rock in the backyard. And that's a pretty hard thing to do, to have so much of your life be absolutely taboo that it has a bad effect on you. So when I finished watching the series, the first thing I did is Google myself, and my mugshot was staring back at me. It was pretty clear right from the get-go that this was something I needed to get in front of somehow. So I decided to go in and just talk, you know, get in front of it, talk to my boss, see what was going to happen. And I fully expected to get canned. You know, it was one thing to be an ex-felon and an entirely different beast to be this now infamous lesbian drug smuggler having sex in their living room.
And your boss was okay with all of that?
He was absolutely one. All of my bosses were okay with it. You were honest with us from the very beginning, and no, we're not going to fire you. By then, I'd already been working for them for a couple of years, so it was a known quantity, and they were awesome about it. And when she told me that they weren't going to fire me, I actually broke down in tears. I was so, you know, they were like happy tears, relief tears. And I didn't realize, you know, I mean, they understood analytically how much was at stake with my job. You know, the job is sort of a linchpin in a house of cards for somebody who's on federal probation. You cannot be unemployed. And for the first 2 years while I was trying to secure that job, I was washing dishes at a pizza place. And circumstances had changed so that now I was needing to financially support both my mother and my brother. And so my losing my job would not only be problematic in terms of the terms of my release or my probation, it would have been like, you know, I just expected everything to come tumbling down. And at the end of all of that tumble, I would probably end up being violated for some other odd reason and go back to prison. So I was totally freaked out. And what I thought was going to be the beginning of the fall didn't happen. The relief was just profound, so much so that I cried like a little baby in front of my boss.
Clary Walter's memoir is called Out of Orange. It's her side of the story that is depicted in Piper Kerman's book, Orange is the New Black, which, of course, is the basis for the Netflix TV series. Clary Walters, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.